Hello, and welcome to this episode of Crop Talk. I'm your host, Thad Stauffer, and joining me again this time is my cast of characters, which I would call our state insurance product officers here at Compeer. I have with me Lucas Conmee, Jason Gama, and Tom Timko. And if you're new to this podcast, Lucas handles our Wisconsin areas, Jason handles our Illinois areas, and Tom handles the state of Minnesota that we work in. And my role is to work with these guys to make sure we're providing expertise and strategy and information to our sales agents within Compeer. So today we're going to take an approach of what's going to happen here post sales closing date, as that will be coming up here on March 15th. And by the time you listen to this podcast, that March 15th sales closing date will have come and passed. So today our focus is on those areas that are coming up with planting, kind of getting prepared for that. We are still sitting across the Compeer territory in areas where we have snow and ice and rain that's across the territory, so planting won't be happening soon, but with a little hope, we'll have some sunshine and drying up coming up here in the coming weeks so we can get in the fields. So before we get started here, guys, it's good to remind this crew here that we do have our final prices for the corn and beans, what we would call the projected prices. We ended up at $4 for corn and $9.54 for our soybeans. Lucas, we just talked about the sales closing date. If you would share with our listeners, what does that mean? What's the importance of that date?
Yeah, so sales closing date in all agents' minds and most customers' minds. So March 15th is the last day that you can purchase multi-peril crop insurance in the Compeer territory. There's no sales of any federally subsidized products after 3/15. So that's the drop dead date. There's no, oh, I forgot, anything like that. So it ends Friday the 15th. That does not close the book, however, on buying hail products or hail coverage. So if you did miss that 3/15 deadline, or you want to make some changes to your hail policy, for sure reach out to your crop insurance agent, your computer agent, and talk through the options that are still there. So as long as it hasn't already hailed, you can still purchase hail insurance.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to note, and guys, jump in if you have other comments here, to Lucas's point on the sales closing date, that's what we would call for the spring crops, right? So crops that we're going to plant this spring, typically within the Compeer territory, you're talking about corn and soybeans, that dominates most of that market. But in some parts of Compeer, if you had fall wheat, that there's another sales closing date, right? So there's some other dates to be aware of. And as we go through our podcast episodes here, we'll definitely touch on that. But, you know, the focus for your comments, Lucas, are predominantly corn and soybeans.
Yeah, so as Thad said, you know, we'll get once we move into what we'll call the next crop year, we'll look at some fall closing dates. But majority of the crops now, you know, coming up here Friday, everything will be shut down. But don't forget about hail. We can still provide you good coverage there. So if you are worried, definitely reach out to your agents.
Yeah, and it's something, too, worth mentioning. March 15th is the date. It's not a suggested date. It's not a date where it's kind of, you know, something you can say, well, I was close. The date's the date, because to your point, Lucas, with this being a federally subsidized program, the date is there for the protection of all of us, including the insurance companies we work with, or what we would call the approved insurance providers, the AIPs, from wanting to know what coverage they're going to have on the books for the upcoming year. So, good. Good information. Well, that kind of hits where we're at from a sales closing standpoint. Lucas, you mentioned hail, and Tom, I'm going to ask you to kind of speak to hail for one, because you're experienced, and two, because in the areas where you're from in southwest Minnesota, I hear you speak at times. It's not a matter of will it hail, but when and how much. So if you would tell our listeners some things to kind of be mindful of when it comes to hail, or points you want to make sure you reinforce with our listeners.
You know, Lucas just got done talking about hail coverage and getting that taken care of here a few moments ago. But if you haven't secured your hail insurance yet, I believe now's a great time to get that done. As you're going through your risk management plan needs program, there's no better time when you're going through your multi-peril to put the hail together, know your total cost, your total coverages, all at the same time. But a point I'd like to make, that if you choose to save a few dollars this year, and keep in mind in some areas the hail coverage or cost premiums is insignificant, but in some areas where I'm from, it typically outweighs the federal crop cost often. So the rates are much higher. But if you choose to save a few dollars this year and elect not to renew your hail coverage, I'd just like to remind the listeners that you can purchase hail later, whether it's May, June, later than that. You might ask yourself, why would I do that later? Well, if you got a good crop out there that's looking good, you might have something to protect as far as value, right? Maybe the weather, the forecast looks rough, and it just gives you that feeling that I'm going to be getting, you know, tough weather week after week. And then most importantly, if commodity prices go higher, I've got a reason to go out there and throw some more hail coverage on there because I've got some value to protect. So the hail coverage is not done. It's not over. And we still have plenty of options for you out there later.
Tom, let's dig in a little bit, right? We want to make sure, maybe keep this high level because there's so many options. But, you know, and Lucas and Jason asked for your input as well. When we look around the Compere territory, there are a lot of different hail options to secure coverage. Maybe if you guys would kind of step out a little bit and maybe talk about the different options we have when it comes to hail coverage, because I think we can all maybe understand the what we call the basic hail policy, but there are some other options we could consider, whether that be protecting hail and or maybe some of the endorsements that might be added to there.
Yeah, I'll speak with Minnesota first, and our rates are all over the board as far as, you know, costs, but quite commonly we'll find Comp 2 Plus on soybeans because, as you said earlier, there's a good chance if you're in that area that gets hail, you're going to get hail. It says how much, right?
So let me pause you there real quick. Comp 2 Plus, that's not an insurance term I hear often. What does Comp 2 Plus mean?
And Comp 2 Plus means basically it's let me start with Comp 2. Comp 2 is a 5% deductible. Then after that, every percent loss would be paid times 2. The plus this means is a zero deductible. So okay. If I have a 5% loss, I'm going to get paid 5%. If I get a 2% loss, I'm going to get paid 2. But once I get beyond that 5%, or really let's say 10%, that two times every percent loss or double takes over. So if I got a 20% loss, minus 5% leaves me 15. 15 times 2, I'd have a 30% payable. So it's a great product for covering the top end dollars or bushels.
Yeah. I'm going to put a plug in here for Wisconsin because, you know, in Wisconsin, typically a lot of agents or computer agents have talked just about basic hail, but the idea of this Comp 2 Plus, like Tom is explaining, is something that I feel is valuable to ask your agent about and really ask them about all the options. Make sure you understand all the options there because even in Wisconsin, where typically we haven't seen a lot of hail like Tom does in Wisconsin, we all know that these storms are getting more severe and more prevalent. So definitely reach out to your agents and ask them about stuff like Comp 2 Plus because I think, you know, even though we don't see a lot of hail and maybe the hail isn't as severe, you know, when the payments start doubling after, call it 10%, I mean, it can really bring some value and make that hail policy really provide its value for you. So make sure you're asking, even though it's something you never heard of, make sure to ask.
And to put some context around that for our listeners, when we say comp, it's basically short and companion. Because over the years, Lucas, to your point, we've seen an industry that the basic hail policy, predominantly in Illinois and Wisconsin, some parts of Minnesota, fairly inexpensive for that peril of hail that it does cover, right? But what we've seen, if I get to areas like parts of Minnesota where hail coverage can be costly due to the fact that it hails every year, we have seen some strategies where I may not insure the full value of the crop on my basic hail policy. I'm going to choose to insure less value because I am going to double up quicker, Tom, to your point of the Comp 2 Plus language, how that policy works.
Yes.
And I've got other options I could consider that are Comp 2, 3, and 4, some areas. But in your experience, Comp 2 is what's driving most of that. Is that fair?
It is a fair statement. It comes down to premium cost with the Comp 3, Comp 4. You just can't budget for that much in my area. Comp 2 Plus fits the needs. Several years back when we had production plan hail rates were much cheaper. Now they become almost too expensive to take. Production plan hail was the premier choice. And now we've moved on to Comp 2 Plus. And it works well for us in our area. And I'm not saying it's the right choice for every area, But if you have some endorsements to go along with Comp 2 Plus or Basics, sometimes that'll drive your decision as well. And as I look at Illinois, it always makes me smile, but their costs are substantially lower than ours. But oftentimes they take the hail insurance for the wind endorsement. Is that right, Jason? Or
yeah, so in Illinois, just to change gears a little bit, we've got obviously crop hail and hail that we worry about, but straight line winds is also a concern in really our territory in northern Illinois. So there's policies out there built for those kinds of perils, wind, green snap, extra harvest expense, those kinds of things. There are loss procedures involved with those wind policies that can get complicated at times, some qualifiers, we'll say. But once you have those coverages in place and you do get a windstorm, there is some coverage out there for those different factors.
So, Jason, let me kind of take a step back there. Within Illinois, what you're seeing, you see a lot of basic hail. Is that a fair statement?
Correct.
And so the reason for that, to kind of piggyback your comments to what I've heard, is they're taking the basic policy because they're also, in a lot of cases, bundling those other endorsements of like wind and green snap, extra harvest. What am I missing?
Replant, extra replant payments that you can purchase under that hail policy. So it really is a comprehensive policy and pretty standard for most guys. It just depends on what all you're trying to protect against, and we can tailor a policy to meet your needs.
Yeah, that makes sense. Tom, let me just take a step back with what you commented. But that's kind of the basic hail side. Comp is basically a form of basic just based on doubling up. You mentioned production hail. Used to be big. Maybe it's not as big. There's still some areas. If you would, at a high level for our listeners, what is production hail?
Yeah, for several years, production hail is way underpriced until the insurance departments and other industry professionals got involved, and they were losing so much money. The rates are now where they should be, so unaffordable. But production plan hail on a big level, typically my favorite was, I call it the production plan 120. So I take 120% of my APH. So if it was 200 on corn, I'd basically be working off a 240 bushel number. And so just a 10% loss, I take 10% times 240 is 24 bushels I'd get qualified to get paid off. And they use a crop insurance spring price number. So let's call it $4 a day. I was going to be eligible to get paid basically $96 an acre based off a 10% loss. But I had to have a hail loss, adjusted loss number of 10%.
Yep.
And I had to have a bushel shortage. But I'm starting from the 240 number. Right? So 240 minus, I mean, there's a good chance I'm going to get paid fully. So it truly protected your top end. And it was the easiest choice from a risk management standpoint to purchase production plan hail. And oftentimes production plan wind worked the same way. So my job is really easy as an agent several years ago until, of course, premiums and rates and stuff are now through the roof.
But okay. Interesting. That stuff we're evaluating to identify, you mentioned premiums and stuff. It's probably a good opportunity here to take time to plug what we would call internally a crop rate tool that takes all those different hail policies and kind of compares them based on premium and rate and what-if scenarios. So that's something that the agent force working here has that option. So that's certainly something we can look at, to your earlier comment, Tom, of, you know, those that are looking to secure hail post 315 or post even planting from that perspective.
Yeah, and Thad, you plugged for the crop rate. You know, even having it in an app form now, so you can ask an agent on a fly, you know, which county they're standing in, what crop is it, which company provides maybe the cheapest rate. We can pull that up in a hurry. So even if you're just standing there talking to an agent that stops out to see you this spring, you know, ask them what the cheapest rate is, and they can pull that up pretty quick for you.
Yeah, I'm gonna slam you real quickly here, and this is good fun here.
Yeah.
Cheapest isn't always best.
You're right.
And that's one of the things we're careful of. We'll evaluate that, but we're also careful, depending on the county and in the state in some cases, what's the right adjuster and or endorsement to go with it to identify we're providing the right coverage.
Yeah.
Because you hit it nail on the head. Our listeners, predominantly if they're producers, they're looking for the most cost-effective way to cover their risk, right? And so that the cheap comment is appropriate, but I think we wouldn't be doing ourselves justice if we didn't evaluate in some cases, what is the best portfolio, the best options across the board.
And Lucas and Thad, that's why I like the crop rate program. I can go out there and make sure out of the several insurance companies we use and make sure they're all competitive. So if I've got one way out of whack, that's, you know,
yep,
substantially, yeah. And that's who you've got your federal crop with, and that's who we prefer to keep your hail with as well, because we can attach it to your acreage report, right? Yep. And so we have a less chance for errors. But if their hail rates are out of whack, typically we'll find a different choice or option for you. But
yeah, and that's the important piece there. And Tom, you mentioned the tying it to the multi-peril policy. There's a lot of different terms for that, but you know, the fact that we tie it to the multi-peril policy is more for a saving piece for the clients we work with, because ultimately in prior years with the standalone hail policies that we still write, but when you tie it to the multi-peril, those acres, when you do the acreage report, flow over. So automatically attaches, you know, once the crops in the ground and crop comes up. So that's a good thing for our producers.
I think it's best to keep your hail with your underlying federal crop company. It just kind of makes everything work a little better and smoother if you have some major events or catastrophic events that happen.
Well, the likelihood you have the same adjuster for hail and multi-peril is high based on that training. So you're going to have that rapport with them from a relationship standpoint of comfort level, knowing, you know, who that adjuster is and with that company. So that's a good thing. Jason, you mentioned some different endorsements for the group here. I'll tee it up. Wind, green snap, replant, you know, are there things that our listeners should be aware of or at questions they should be asking when it comes to those types of endorsements?
Yeah, so we all understand the underlying multi-peril policy. It's a product that doesn't change from company to company. So an area where the companies can kind of shine and you know, set themselves apart from each other is on some of their offerings around the hail policy. So some of the endorsements are pretty standard. When you talk about wind, you've got really three main types of policies or types of coverages that you can purchase. The first one being green snap, pretty simple. Early in the crop season, that corn plant is up. In some cases, past the seventh leaf stage, and a wind event comes and it literally severs the stalk. It cuts the plant off. That's what we would call green snap. There's coverage there. There's some procedure in place as to what you would get paid on that. Typically, you're going to do a stand reduction type of loss all the way up through the 17th leaf stage. Once you get past 17 leaf, then it would be more of a one-for-one type of payment there. So there's a little bit of moving parts there, but ultimately it's a severed plant that is dead and is not going to produce an ear. Then you've got a wind coverage, which most of the wind policies include the green snap piece. But what the wind policy then adds on to the green snap is situations where you've got a wind event and the plant is not severed. Now you've got a wind event typically later on in the season where the crop lays flat. There's some qualifiers there where the angle of the stalk has to be less than 20 degrees and the ear has to be less than 12 inches off the ground, but that's getting deep into the weeds. At that point, you've got a wind event. A lot of times it is difficult to get paid under just straight wind. In other words, the plant is either severed where you're getting paid on the green snap, or on the wind event you have this wind event where the crop is laying flat. The adjuster will come back after harvest and count ears on the ground, which would be determined or called unrecoverable ears. That's a little bit more difficult to get paid on. The third type of coverage that's out there that also gets paid quite heavily is the extra harvest expense. So let's just take a scenario where you've got a wind event. It didn't sever the plant, so there is no green snap payment. The crop did lay flat. However, the plant goosenecked back up to get somewhat vertical, so you can no longer get paid on the wind policy because you are able to go and get those ears. But it's just a pain in the butt to go get them, right? You've got gooseneck plants. You may have to go sideways. You may have to go really slow, so your expense to harvest that crop goes up. Extra harvest expense is there to cover that cost. It's a flat payment. if as long as those wind qualifiers were met. So that's a product that does get paid. And what we're starting to see more and more is the companies offering that extra harvest expense separate, or that coverage separate from the actual wind policy. So it's a nice little carrot that's out there. In addition to those three types of coverage, there's also extra replant or replant extra. It's called different things at different AIPs. And ultimately, that's a case where hail was bad enough that you're looking at replanting. And of course, you're going to have some coverage on your underlying multi-peril policy around replant, which we'll talk about in a moment. But you'll also have the ability to capture some dollar per acre on your hail replant endorsement. It does cost more. It's an endorsement that you're adding on to the policy, so there's extra premium due, but there is coverage there. That payout does vary from AIP to AIP, ranging from $50 an acre up to $75 an acre if you've purchased that extra replant coverage under your crop hail policy. I know that gets a little confusing, but again, ultimately, that multi-peril policy is standard and the same across the board. So companies are using the crop hail policy or their named peril policy to kind of differentiate themselves against their competitors in the marketplace.
So I got a question for Tom and Jason, just because I am from Wisconsin and I'm used to basic hail. So
sorry,
you just
about that,
man. Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. You just threw a lot of stuff at me and or a customer. You got green snap, we got wind, we got extra harvest. Do you see a lot of guys picking and choosing stuff, or how does that go? Because, I mean, you just threw a lot of options, and I'm sitting here thinking, well, I don't know what's going to happen. What do you guys see in your states?
Yeah, I'll give you my quick thoughts on that. It's usually based off of producers' experience the prior year, so it's like you're a year behind, right? Because I had a big win event, and I went through the pain and suffering. Now I'm not going to go through that again, so I'm going to take the coverage. And they buy the coverage for about 3 years, and they don't have it, and they drop it, and then it comes back again. So it's a great deal from an agent perspective. Now, we used to always joke, it's like nothing sells hail like a good hailstorm, right? But honestly, if it's important to producers these days, because wind costs money in my area, the hail actually costs as much as the hail coverage. And so if the wind's a big deal for them, they'll take it out, okay, consistently. And really being consistent with your risk management plan is probably the most important thing. I don't know. What's your experience, Jason?
I think you hit it on the head. It's experience, 100%. And in Illinois, we get enough straight-line wind that it is a deal. And so we have had experience from our standpoint. The companies have had experience. The insureds have had experience individually. So we roll all that up into saying, hey, if you live in these counties or this corridor, the likelihood of straight line wind is there. Now let's dive a little bit deeper to your point, Lucas, into what coverage is available and what makes sense. What has paid out, what hasn't, what coverage is available. So it really then becomes kind of a one-on-one, case-by-case discussion. And ultimately, it's cost, right? So yes, you can break all those things out that I explained to make the process cheaper and really tailor the coverage you want for the peril that you're trying to cover against. I guess my point in all of saying all of that is there's coverage out there, there's options out there to protect against what you have experienced or are worried about experiencing, and we can tailor and move and add and delete and subtract all those different kinds of coverage to get exact coverage you want for the price you're looking for.
Oh, well said.
That was a lot. Again, to your point, a lot there. There's a lot to dig into. The key takeaway is, you know, visit with your crop insurance agent for, you know, the risks you're worried about, so that he or she can help tailor that. To your point, Jason, that piece there. Another comment, just a high level from the hail. You mentioned the wind. There are procedures that are approved from a third party that the insurance companies work with that kind of sets those standards for how claims are established. So that's important too. That I think sometimes we wonder, where did they come up with this procedure and how did they come up with this loss? And it's important to note there are procedures. Before we leave the kind of whole hail discussion here, guys, I think it's probably important too to highlight some of the areas within the hail policy that are covered that sometimes get lost in being explained. I'll just kind of throw the ball up in the air, so to speak, here and let you guys kind of touch on some of those different areas that are important to the hail policy.
Yeah, believe it or not, I file a hail vandalism claim every year. Never fails that I file a hail vandalism claim. And what that means typically is that someone either in Wisconsin, which is pretty typical, had too much to drink and drove through somebody's corn or bean field and did some damage, or kids decided to go do some donuts in somebody's field,
yeah.
And your basic hail policy will cover vandalism. There has to be a police report filed, yeah. But if you can't get somebody to pay for it, your hail policy will then kick in. Like I said, it never fails. It happens to me every year. Maybe it's a Wisconsin thing, but that is one reason that I file hail claims, is because of vandalism.
That's good. And it does. And the policy automatically covers that. What else is in there that we need to address?
What do we have? We have a green transportation, basically. From typically field to bends, bend to elevator oftentimes. So if you've got wagons or something, we'll see it more common in wagons. They tip over in a road or ditch. You're going to have some coverage out there. And quite honestly, you're going to be able to back up most of that.
Yep.
But it may cover some of the deductibles that your other farm insurance isn't going to cover. And so you're going to have some dollars out there as well that I think a lot of people don't know that's available. Yep. So take advantage of it.
So transit coverage. Yep. And then there's what else we have?
Another one comes to mind along those lines is stored grain coverage. There's some protection with your grain in that bin. Some of the companies have offered some grain store coverage in silage bags, or grain bags, I should say. So that's kind of a newer thing. Another one is fire and lightning. There's some coverage there if lightning were to strike a field and start it on fire.
Or in some cases with, you know, what we see often with a fire that's, can happen with a cigarette, right? There's policies, or the combine sparks a chaff out the backside and you get a fire that starts there. The hail policy will cover that. And so those are important areas to highlight, because while we talk hail and hail, the hail policy covers hail, there are other pieces to that puzzle. So that's good. Guys, let's jump into some issues that could be seen throughout Comp here for crops that have already been planted. It may cause, some of the challenges we're going to have when planting corn and beans this spring. So, Lucas, take it from there, if you would, on some of those issues.
Yeah, so Wisconsin being a big dairy state, lots of alfalfa out there, some winter wheat. And so we're getting into that time of year where we're starting to watch the snow melt, unfortunately watch the ice melt. And so now we have some concerns about forage and winter wheat. So, years ago, if you would have had a forage policy or wheat policy, agents are pretty good. They just get those claims open right away. Can't do that anymore. And then we talked about that in the fall with claims. You got to notify your agent if you got issues. Now that an agent will be pretty up to speed and know you got acres out there, so they'll be in contact. But just in case, if you have any concerns at all, any worries about winter kill, you call your agent and make sure we get claims open. Obviously,
Let me jump back. And maybe there are some out there that are maybe even new to farming or new to this podcast. Winter kill is a term we all understand and know. What, maybe at a high level, what is winter kill?
Sure. I mean, with winter wheat, planted winter wheat last year, maybe got out of the ground, or maybe planted late and now it just doesn't look good. You got lots of dead spots in the field. There's going to be decisions you can make there with that crop if you're going to destroy it and plant a second crop. I won't dive too much in the details there. That's something the adjuster and or agent can kind of go through with you. But basically, if anything isn't looking good coming out of this spring or coming out of this winter more specifically, talk to your agent about what your options are and what your coverage looks like from there on out. Winter wheat looks bad. Something that's big, important policy, a lot of the dairies or alfalfa producers, is their forage seeding policy. So basically what we insured was if you planted alfalfa last spring and then it was insured on your policy last summer, well, now we're finally looking at to see if that alfalfa made it through that first growing year.
Okay.
And a quick reminder on that policy, whether you're going to tear that alfalfa field up or not, if there's any big water holes or edges of fields that didn't make it, it's important to get a claim open and have adjusters come look at it, because that's a policy that pays acre one. There's some quick adjusting policy, but it's a policy that has a really good value. We see a lot of claims from it every year. We see a lot of checks come through. So if there's any spot whatsoever, I mean the small spot, have a adjuster come look at it. Or even if the stand isn't as great as you wanted it, make sure they come look at it. You might leave it and you might get some cuttings off of it, but make sure an adjuster comes and looks at it. And again, with the wheat too, if you're questioning, you know, at least know what your options are, what the value is from your insurance policy, and you know what kind of different things you can look at. So just, you know, we say it all the time, and I can't reiterate it enough. You know, if you have any questions or any doubts in your head about how your crop looks, your winter wheat crop, your forage, especially anything that was seeded last year, and you have one of those policies, definitely contact your agent, and so you can see what all your options are.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway, Lucas, that you've drove home here for us today is don't do anything without contacting your agent first.
Absolutely. Do not tear anything up without contacting your agent, have an adjuster look at it, because that can really cause damage. Because if they don't look at it, they don't know what was there, what wasn't there. So before you do anything, have somebody look at it. And frankly, you're going to kind of see some issues before you want to get into it. But as soon as you see those issues, just call your agent and be like, hey, I got some questions. They'll get an adjuster out there and take a look, and then you know what your options are going forward.
Yeah, but Lucas, sometimes as a producer or a farmer, I make that decision on a Sunday, and I'm ready to go rip it up.
Yeah, call your agent. Just do it. Even if it's a Sunday, even if it's Mother's Day. We had some issues a couple of, we were just talking about Mother's Day. Call your agent. You know, we'll work and get an adjuster out there as fast as we can. It may not work, but, you know, whenever you think of it or crosses your mind, call your agent.
Yeah, and Tom, you being our typical farmer, right, that we have to deal with, I'm not sure if you're the typical farmer, but we sometimes lean on you from that perspective. The point for our listeners is if and when you know you have concerns, it's to call your agent, submit that loss, because from a claim standpoint, adjusters, AIP needs to be notified, and that kind of starts the process for what your options are. And if we have situations where the notice was not made, then there opens up for claims to be denied or not accepted because we didn't follow the proper rules.
You know, Lucas, here's my favorite example in Minnesota. I mean, it'll be like a big rain event, and it's probably the middle of June, maybe a little bit later, and it looks like that water's going to be there for like a month, right? And happens every year. It's either on a weekend or July 4th. Like, that water's not going to go. All of a sudden, it's gone. The clients weren't sure if they're going to replant, so they decided not to call us and have something turned in, right? And the next thing you know, they're replanting 200 acres on July 4th, right? Or July 1st, whatever it might be. I guess my point on is, if you've got some event out there and you're not sure, still call your agent, turn in a claim, because it's always easy to withdraw the claim, right?
Yep.
And here's another thing, you know, so we were just talking about, I was looking at wheat prices, and I know this is a, you know, into the weeds type thing. But, you know, if a farmer's got some winter wheat and the prices are already tanking, and, you know, say we get some kind of rally in the corn price, and no matter what, you're going to tear that wheat crop up.
Yep.
That's fine, but just make sure it's adjusted. You know, I understand the economics of it, and we all do too, but just make sure you call your agent, let an adjuster come get some kind of valuation on it, because otherwise, you know, we throw a zero in that APH, and, you know, those types of things can last for a while. So even if you're making an economic decision, make sure you call your agent, we get an adjuster to take a look at it.
And I would say to our listeners, stay tuned for the coming podcast, because we're going to dive into some of that stuff as it becomes more relative, because that's a huge thing to discuss and huge impact. So again, the economics are important. We want you to make good business decisions, but there's also the impact, what happens insurance. So that's the important piece. So,
hey, Lucas, how soon can they determine if that – how soon can they appraise the winter wheat, for example?
So I'm gonna look at Jason and see if he can help me answer that question, because I'm not sure I exactly know.
Does this snow got to be gone yet?
Yeah, it's actually got to be.
I think the rule of thumb is snow should be off of the crop. So once it is, Jason, what happens?
Yeah, so you've got to get it out of dormancy. So that's the big key, because like anything, the adjuster is not going to know what that crop is going to do until it gets out of dormancy. So they're really just kind of waiting until that point to where they can make a determination: what's alive, what's dead, what's going to make it, what's not. It can be early in the year, but it's got to get out of dormancy first to see what we're up against.
So for those non-wheat growers, it means this has got to green up and start growing.
It really does.
See what's going to
be. Again, early in the process, the adjuster will be all over it. you're not going to be waiting forever, but you definitely have to get it out of dormancy before they can start to do an accurate appraisal and give you the go-ahead to rip it up and move on.
But that's not to say we couldn't open, you know, if you already think there's going to be issues, we can open the claim now and make sure you got an adjuster signed and you got that adjuster on speed dial and they can get out there. When it is out of dormancy, we can be ready to go.
Yeah, because I think the important thing is for the listeners who are even outside the snow-packed areas of Wisconsin, Minnesota, even if you're in parts of Illinois, with the amount of snowfall and freezes we've seen, I think there's expectations in the central part of Illinois and northern part of Illinois, you're going to see some winter kill issues as well. So, you know, and snow's off in those areas right now. So it's certainly something. But as I think about it here and we're transitioning, we've seen some warm weather start to creep in. Planters will be rolling here, as we talked earlier, hopefully soon. But before planters roll, there are some dates that are specific to crop insurance that we need to be aware of and share around the term called early plant date. So, guys, what are some things we need to be aware of when it comes to early plant date? Why does that matter? How does that affect insurance? So kind of throw the ball up here, and who's going to take that discussion and run with it?
Yeah, so I will. So the RMA puts into their policy language a couple of important dates as we talk about spring crops, one of them being the initial plant date or the earliest plant date, same thing, and also the final plant date for that crop for corn and beans we're talking. So these dates are important because although multi-peril underlying insurance coverage does attach itself once you put the crop into the ground, no matter what date it is. There are replant payments and replant language around the multi-peril policy that if you plant earlier than these earliest plant dates or initial plant dates, then replant coverage is not available. So you do have coverage on the crop. It is insured if you plant before these dates, but replant, for instance, is no longer available if you plant earlier than these dates. So just to run around our territory real quick on what some of those dates are, they're generally around the same time from each other, but as you move around geographically, as you move farther north, obviously your dates become a little bit later just because the growing season is shorter. So if we start in our southern territory, in our Illinois side, northern Illinois, you're looking at corn. Can range from April 5th to April 10th, depending on where you're at in northern Illinois as an initial plant date. Soybeans, you're looking at April 20th through April 24th, somewhere in there, depending on where you sit in what county you sit in. Wisconsin, very similar on corn. You're looking at April 21st. Soybeans, April 21st, and also April 26th, depending on where you're sitting. And then just to round out in Minnesota, corn April 11th and soybeans April 21st. Again, your local agent will be the contact person to determine exactly which county you're in and exactly what initial plant date or earliest plant date applies to you specifically. But you can plan on in our southern area, April 5th, and all the way up to our northern areas for corn, our northern areas of April 21st. So somewhere in there. Again, coverage applies no matter when you put the crop in, but replant coverage is only going to be offered if you plant after those initial plant dates.
So as a producer, as I think about it, weather turns nice, I start to plant before those dates. What happens?
Yeah, again, insurance will attach. You have coverage going forward from a bushel or revenue standpoint, but you're not going to be eligible for any replant payment.
And if you tend to plant earlier, especially beans. We've had those conversations prior. More and more people are planting beans same time or as early as corn. What are my options?
Yeah, so back to our earlier conversation around the crop hail policy, even though you're limited and not available or able to receive a multi-peril replant payment, if you paid extra and added a replant extra policy or coverage onto your crop hail policy, then some of the AIPs are starting to come out this year for the first time and offering replant payment, 10 days ahead of that initial plant date. So you do have options, Tom, in that case, but you would have to have purchased that additional coverage under your crop hail policy because the multi-peril policy has limitations.
Right. And so I know because your rates, everything's cheap and costs almost nothing in Illinois, so I know they do some bundling over there. In my case, in Minnesota, I can just buy the buy-up replant. They call it the replant buy-up, basically. And so I can add that extra $40, $50 or more onto my federal crop, either standalone or on top of the federal crop replant if I qualify for that. So I guess my thought is if you're going to be, you got ground that's well tiled and you tend to plant earlier than most and you treat your seed and you're not afraid of that, I make a suggestion to talk to your agent about those buy-up replant options. They're usually cost-effective. I'm just throwing it out there.
Sure. Jumping back to just the normal multi-peril replant provision, if you plant after those initial plant dates are on or after, then you'll be available for a payment there or have access to a payment there. How that payment works is there's some predetermined calculations that RMA lays out. So if we're looking at corn, the payment there on the multi-peril would be 8 bushels times the price, which we're looking at a $4 price. So this year you're looking at about $32 an acre for corn to replant as a payment. And then on soybean side, they allow 3 bushel of soybeans times the price, which this year is the $9.54. So that would get you a $28.62 payment per acre. Those 8 bushel numbers and 3 bushel numbers are predetermined. They've been that way for 20 plus years. So those are predetermined values. The only thing that changes in that equation is whatever price we land at as far as the spring price goes.
And Jason, I want to reinforce for the listeners here that in the terms of crop insurance, replanting is going back to the same crop. Corn to corn, beans to beans. There's a whole other host of issues that we'll talk about in a later podcast if you determine that you don't want to plant back to that same crop and what the impact is there. But for the purpose of this conversation, it's important to remind our listeners again that replanting's back to the same crop. Okay, good. All right, guys, let's kind of bring closure to this discussion today. But before we do, let's hit one topic that's important. Those listening that are farmers, you know, buy these policies. Agents are listening to this, the importance of what we do and what we sell. Tom, if you would, since you've got you're the farmer of the group here, taking the policy, what are a couple of things that we should be concerned with, or I shouldn't say concerned, thinking about by utilizing your policy even before you plant a seed?
You know, and when I think about what the most important thing is when it comes to risk management, has everything to do with selling your crop at profitable levels, right? In my opinion. So last year, last June, when prices were going up, did you get some 2019 corn sold or some 2019 beans sold? I got no beans sold last year because it looked like it was going higher. So I'm all beans this year. It's looking bad. So let's focus on corn because I think that's got a lot more fun potential to it. So last June, corn probably got up to 415 without going back and looking. I mean, for me right now, a target for corn for 2019, if I was a producer, would be 415 futures is a great place to be. We've already been, you know, we averaged $4 on the spring crop insurance, right? So we got close to maybe 406, 7 futures maybe at one time. That's not where I really want to be. But quite honestly, if I've got an 85% policy and I got a 200 bushel APH, I have 170 bushel guarantee times a $4 spring price. So I've got, what, $680 of revenue. That crop insurance policy, one of its primary purposes, yeah, supposed to protect me from disasters and lost bushels and lost revenue. But more importantly, supposed to give me the oomph and the confidence to go out there and actually market technically 170 bushels an acre ahead of time, right? And if you think about that, and we'll talk about some of those numbers later, if I did 170 bushels ahead of time, even before I plant, there's 50% of people out there, farmers, say, yeah, I'm fine with that. And the other 50% is like, I ain't selling anything until I get in and bend, right?
Yeah.
Depends upon your financial situation, but you should have something done. And quite honestly, if I do, my new goal is to be doing at least 80% of my expected production, because if I can do that, then I've got some extra bushels to play with maybe. But I'll be closer to covering more of my initial cost production. I'll be able to cover my immediate cash flow needs. But I'm going to back up, and I'm going to talk about the producer that maybe doesn't need the money every year. So I'm going to talk about the guy that doesn't need to sell any fall grain in the fall. I'm going to talk about the guy that has enough storage that he can store all his crop. I'm going to talk about Tom Timko's ideal situation, how to make money on corn. And that's my favorite example. So if we get the 415 futures here, we're not that far away. I guess now we're technically 20 to 24 cents away with the market drops today. But if I'm going to go out there and make money, I'm going to sell 170 bushels an acre when it gets to 415. Maybe I'll scale up, but I got to make sure I get enough sold. So 415 futures probably still doesn't make me money. But if I can store my crop, I'm going to be able to go out there and capture the carry in the market, right? The difference between December futures and July futures. I could pick other months too, but last year it was a little low. We only got up to about 26 cents a carry. Doesn't mean we're going to have that much carry in the market, but a lot of times we get 28 cents, 30 cents. So if I've got storage, I'm going to be able to add on another 28 cents, for example, to that 415 futures. I'm going to get the 443 futures. I'm going to have to wait to June, July to deliver those. So hopefully I can cover my immediate cash flow needs with lines of credits and so forth. I'm hoping maybe it's to say a 25 cent basis, which in some places in Illinois, it's like, really? I'm hoping for 0 or 10 cents, right? In Wisconsin, some areas, if you're near ethanol plants, might be very good too. Minnesota, I'm hoping with my ethanol plants in my area, I'm hoping for maybe 15, 20, 25 cents. You don't know. Then I get the northern mid Minnesota where they don't have ethanol plants and they're going to be looking at 45 cents when I'm getting 25 cents. Right? It's going to be different for every area is my point. But if I use a 25 cent basis and I haul that in June, July, I'm looking at 418 cash. I should be able to make money at 418 cash, right? Now, keep in mind there's a cost. I had to hang on to that grain all the way to June and July, so there might be some interest costs I have to assess myself if I have to borrow money to get me through. But we have opportunities to make money in the corn. It helps if you got storage, in my opinion. Hedge to rise are my favorite. I think that's the best way to go, in my opinion. But you can always sell some cash as you need to do it as well. Beans? I got no answer for you on beans, so I got nothing for you on beans.
Just quick question, Tom. How do I find out how many bushels I have insured?
How many bushels you have insured?
Yep.
Is this a trick question?
Yeah, because I'm...
But if I don't carry an 85% positive, I mean, how do I know for sure how many I have insured? I got optional units. I got a whole bunch of different land in different places with different APHs. How do I figure it out?
Well, every year, if I meet with the crop insurance agent, which I hope they are, you're going to be going through that with your agent, and they're going to be giving you that number, and sometimes a weighted average number, so you're going to know exactly how many bushels you'd be able to sell. Whether you're optional or enterprise doesn't matter. Now, your good agent should be giving that information to you, but quite honestly, rule of thumb, you should know what your APHs are, essentially, and it doesn't have to be exact all the time.
Fair enough. That's what I was looking for, is just something that, you know, we should know going into the spring, you should have known how many bushels you have insured.
Yeah, and leveraging the approved production reports that we provide all of our clients is an important way to start. One thing, let me kind of piggyback kind of Tom's comments and even Lucas, some of yours to that point is, keep in mind too, we just talked about what the multi-peril policy does from that perspective, and using the policy to your advantage. You pay cost for it. You know, again, Tom, you said use the confidence. It's also important, too, to note that for the producers out there that did buy some of those band of coverage policies we talked about last podcast, is you now have another band of policy, bushels, that you could be aggressive in selling as well because you've got that top-end shallow loss piece. So that's important to have as well.
Yeah, we definitely saw some interest in those policies. And if we use those same numbers Tom was talking about, if you have a 200 APH and you took some type of 10% band somewhere, that adds you another 20 bushels an acre that you have to market. So that was, you know, another reason to take one of those policies. You know, we talked about whether you got dollar coverage or bushels, but in the marketing scheme, yeah, if you added a 10% band, 10% of 200 is 20 bushels. That's another 20 bushels per acre that if we get a rally like we're hoping for and think is possible, then you have some more flexibility there.
You know, you're right on that. Extra 10%, in my example, 418 cash, right? Now I realize you're not going to get 418 cash for every bushel, right? But that actually is over $80 an acre. So in my example earlier, I talked about if I did the full 85% of 200 and I said 170 bushels and 418 cash, that's $710 of revenue. If I decided that you only sell 75% of that APH, which is 150 bushels, that's only $627 of revenue. Which number sounds better to you? 627 or 710?
710.
Yeah. It wasn't even a trick question. We'll go with the higher there.
And so the 95% level, if you actually sold the same 418 rate for everything, you'd have close to $790 of revenue. Okay. Now, producers like, there's no way I'm selling 95% of my production, you know, in case I can't deliver or something. My opinion, you can do 75. If you know you're going to the same elevator ethanol plant, you're probably going to do a lot of your hedging there, right? So you may do some hedge derives on 75% of it. Maybe the other 25%, you do something yourself on the board so you don't have to deliver it. Maybe you have a different program out there that allows you a little flexibility. So there's a lot of different ways. It doesn't all have to be at the same place, same hedge derived, because quite honestly, it does put you a little bit at risk. So.
Yeah. So no, good information there. Final plug for producers to be thinking about is starting April 1st. There'll be some options if folks are looking to lock in prices for later for 2019 into 2020 for the 2020 crop year. Those policies will hit the street and be available here coming up April 1st. So it's certainly something that we seem like we've talked about 2019. We'll continue to drive that in 2019 crop year and future episodes here. But again, it's not too early to be thinking about 2020 if the markets present a decent opportunity to lock in a projected price now or coming up for the 2020 crop year. So guys, once again, thank you for your time, your commitment, your information here today. For you listening, please take an opportunity to make sure you're rating, subscribing, reviewing this podcast. We certainly love to see you tell a friend as we're building up this grassroots effort of sharing information within this Crop Talk format. You can always go to compeer.com and get more information or follow us on social media. Look for just Compeer Financial, and you'll find that in all the different social media platforms. So look forward to talking to you again on the next episode of Crop Talk. Have a great day.